Thinking warm thoughts here.
Absolutely.
On D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. It's not summertime, but I kind of wish it was.
That's the theme on this. We gonna melt all the ice up here.
I did say to you this morning, I said, if Informer by Snow is not on your playlist, what are we even doing here? But I get the theme, so that's okay.
But I couldn't put that on
We're
there.
We're trying
it
to warm it up.
Words on there.
I can't wait to hear Hot in Her at some point during this show. I don't know if that's on your list.
Hey, don't spoil it.
Oh, okay. It might be.
There are certain things within the playlist that's appropriate for the time.
All right. We'll see.
You all enjoy the soundtrack.
All right. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. And Chad, we're learning that this winter storm, her name is Fern. I didn't know that. Do you know any ferns?
I don't know any ferns that don't live in a nursing home. I feel like my grandmother used to call in a couple of ferns back in the day. It also sounds like the aunt in a 70s sitcom. Like Aunt Fern.
Yes.
I may just be making that up, but that would be a great character name for a 70s sitcom woman. But no, I personally don't know any ferns anymore. But it's a terrific name.
And as an Eastsider, I've had some ferns stolen off my front porch. That's just part of it.
I know a guy named Vern.
You know a guy named Vern.
I think of tending to the ferns.
There we go.
Yeah. By the way, Adam, I like how you said Hot and Her. The way that Nelly pronounces it.
Yes, because it's H-E-R-R-E. There's an extra R. It's Hot in Her, not Hot in Here.
That doesn't sound right.
Well, anyway.
I was confused for a second.
Well, you guys.
I'm glad you've clarified.
You guys are tragically unhip. Anyway.
Oh, man.
Just kidding. So, Chad, the Tennessee Titans have hired Robert Saleh as their next head coach. He will be introduced to all of us next week. I have a two-part question for you. What is the most encouraging aspect to you of the Titans hiring of Robert Saleh? And what is the most concerning aspect of the Titans hiring of Robert Saleh to you?
I'll start with the discouraging part of it. If Amy Adams Strunk pushed this on Mike Borgonzi, the way it was initially written in the ESPN report from TD and from I don't know that I'm fully buying that they just worded it differently. I think they were hearing from someone that it may have been strongly suggested that that they hire Robert Saleh in the owners in the room there. That's not a good sign of Amy Adams Strunk meddling. Now, maybe they did just word it too strongly and came back and said, oh, it was a collaboration and everybody's decided on it equally and all of that. But if Mike Borgonzi wasn't allowed to hire the person he wanted to hire, which, by the way, I like to hire better than Nagy, but if he really wanted Nagy and the owner said, no, you got to hire this guy, I don't love that part of it. But now the encouraging part of it would be this. Robert Saleh, everything that we hear about him and every reason the Titans hired him sounds a lot like what they had with Mike Vrabel. Now, one could say, well, why'd you fire Mike Vrabel? I would definitely ask that question. But the good part of this is, hey, you can realize we made a mistake. We need that type of presence in the locker room. We need that type of accountability culture, defense first, run the football, toughness, you know, helping out all those different things that Mike Vrabel wanted to stand for. With the Titans, if you can get that package and get somebody who gets along with the owner and the GM, I think that's a good thing. So if that's the reason they hired Robert Saleh and that's everything I hear about him, I do think that part of it's encouraging. I'm just a little bit discouraged about that initial report and how the wording was changed a little bit later. I think that somebody probably called ESPN on that and wanted that story changed, and that's why it happened. And to me, that's discouraging.
Which offensive coordinator candidate do you think would get the most out of Cam Ward?
Boy, that's a great question. I think Arthur Smith would, because I've seen it with Arthur Smith right here with Ryan Tannehill and what he was able to do. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, since then, we have not seen an offense that was able to generate as many open passes as what Arthur Smith could do with play action. Now, they had Derrick Henry in the backfield, which helped also. But I do like the prospects of an Arthur Smith coming back home and being able to get a lot out of Cam Ward the same way he did Ryan Tannehill. But, look, I think that the question you asked, Adam, is the important one. Who's going to mesh the best with the quarterback? because it's clear the Titans are they're going to move forward, and they should. They're going to move forward with the hope that their number one pick from a year ago is their franchise guy. So now that you got the head coach in place and he's a defensive-minded guy, the hire is going to be the offensive head coach. And I'm not calling him an offensive coordinator because this needs to be an OHC. This is an offensive head coach. Robert Saleh can worry about the team, and he can worry about the defense. You need to hire someone maybe that's got head coaching experience, somebody that can come in and have the gravitas to lead the offense and be the head coach of that side of the football. I think Arthur Smith could do that. I think a number of guys could do that. So I'm for anyone that has that level of pull that could make that happen to help out Cam Ward.
Now, Chad, they've announced that obviously they're keeping Bones Fossil, and that was probably more than likely the right move to make. He's the best in the game right now, so why would you let him go? But then Luke Stocker and Randy Jordan. Do you think there's anybody else on this staff right now that deserves to come back? We talked about Bo Hardiger yesterday and just his relationship with Cam. Could he be another one that survives the firings?
Yeah, I don't think anyone else should other than who you just laid out, D. Mason. That's maybe Bo Hardiger. And to me, that's completely reliant on his relationship with Cam Ward. Mm-hmm. If they've got a good working relationship, if Cam Ward trusts him, if Robert Saleh, take Robert Saleh aside, whoever his offensive coordinator hire is, if they believe that Bo Hardiger knows what he's doing and has a good working relationship with Cam Ward and can convey to him what they want to do offensively, I'm all for keeping Bo Hardiger. I don't think there's anyone else really worth keeping. And that's not a knock at all these guys being terrible coaches or anything. This is just how it goes. When you clean house, when you're going in a different direction, when you're hiring a coach who's already been a head coach, who has all those relationships with other guys they want to bring in, you're allowing them to hire their staff. I don't think you're forcing their hand with anyone else on the staff of the team that's been as bad as they've been the last couple of years.
Now, with that being said, because Saleh comes in here, and obviously they retained three from the previous coaching staff as of now, but do you think they allow him to build the staff that he wants to build? Because ultimately, you know, Barganzi is tasked to, you know, making sure the right coach is coming here. But do you think it's going to be all on Saleh to go get his guys?
I hope so. Mm-hmm. I really hope so. I hope that it's Robert Saleh making these hires for his staff, because I've been very clear about the need for clarity with the Titans organization. I think they started down that path when they essentially demoted Chad Brinker and made Mike Barganzi in charge of football decisions, in charge of the roster, in charge of hiring a coach and all those things. So if you're going that direction, you know, I think Mike Barganzi in charge of the roster, he hires the coach goes and hires his staff. I think you're off on a bad foot if you tell a coach, hey, you need to hire these guys, or this is the, you know, we're going to give you this job, but you got to go out and bring this guy in because we like him a lot or whatever. Now the Bones Fossil thing, you nailed it, D. Mace. It's the right move to keep him. He's a really good special teams coach. If he's under contract, you know, he's well respected across the league. I don't think Robert Saleh would have any interest in cutting him loose anyways. So if that's part of the deal, it's like, great. Well, that's one less hire I got to make when you come in and that guy's already under contract. So that's a no-brainer to me. But if you're coming in and saying you need to hire this receiver coach or this quarterback coach or whatever it may be, I think that's a bad spot. And again, the offensive staff positions, I think, really comes down to your offensive head coach. Mm-hmm. Because Robert Saleh paired with the right offensive coordinator could be a great duo for the Titans. Robert Saleh with no plan and leading the offense, I mean, that's not the ideal situation. I really think getting someone with great experience that's got a bunch of contacts, that knows who they want to bring in as coaches, I think that's really going to help Robert Saleh and what he's trying to accomplish, because I believe he's about a lot of the same things Mike Vrabel was. Mm-hmm. And I think that should be music to the ears of Titans fans, that you're going to get that culture back with Saleh.
We're talking with Chad Withrow, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Chad, D. Mace and I had a pretty good debate on the heels of Indiana's win. And I'm going to try to paraphrase Derek's argument here, and it was basically that this is going to be the new landscape of college football. And it may not be Indiana every year, but there's going to be more programs that don't have that traditional stigma attached to them that will win national championships. And that might be true, and I'm curious if you think that's going to be true, or will the old traditional powers just figure it out better, just like everybody started copying the A's after Moneyball, and the next thing you know, it's the Dodgers, it's the Red Sox. They figure out how to do better what the A's were doing because they have more resources. But I still think the Indiana story is one of the greatest college football stories ever. What do you think?
It's one of the greatest college football stories there ever. And look, I don't think it's the new norm that you're going to have five different Indianas pop up, you know, every year out of nowhere and suddenly be a college football powerhouse for multiple years. I do think that you're going to have different teams follow that Indiana model, like a Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt had a very specific model for how they built that roster also and won 10 games this year. You're going to have more of those teams each year. And I think those programs are going to kind of cycle in and out of winning double-digit games, of competing for a national title, and all of that. I think the problem with just expecting another Indiana to pop up is that in doing that, you'd be expecting another Kurt Cignetti to pop up. And I don't see that happening because this guy could be one of one. He's that good. I mean, this team committed 8 turnovers over 16 games. They lost one fumble all season. That was in week 2. I mean, you can chalk that up to good luck that you didn't have any tip passes for interceptions and all those things that goes into it. But most of that is coaching. And those guys are expert coaches. And that team just always seemed to make the right decision. And I don't know that we're going to see a lot more of that expert-level coaching in college football to the level of Kurt Cignetti. But, you know, this is not the only time we've seen these glimpses of what a program could be. I mean, I think of Bill McCartney in the late 80s, early 90s with Colorado, winning a national championship. They haven't been able to replicate that since. We're going on 30-plus years, and they have not been that relevant since, even though they had some success with Coach Prime. So I do think we're going to see other pop-up programs. But the other thing you're going to start having now, Willie, and it's a kind of a localized story at this point, is everybody's going to come in and raid the system of what Cignetti's doing. You know, think about Nick Saban and all those teams he coached. Think about all the offensive coordinators he had, all the defensive coordinators, all the guys who got head coaching opportunities, including eventually Kurt Cignetti, who was a position coach for him at one point. So can Cignetti recreate this with different coordinators, different coaches? We just saw Josh Heupel in Tennessee pay $1.2 million for their strength coach and $500,000 for the assistant strength coach. They're spending over $2 million on their strength program just to go replicate what Indiana is doing. And they had the guy here 12 hours after they won the national title. Tennessee's not going to be the last program to do that, to go raid the cupboard of Indiana resources because they want to replicate what they've seen with Indiana. And that's smart business if that's what you're trying to do. But Tennessee's not the last to do that. So can they survive that, to me, now is the question.
So in light of this, where do you see Tennessee evolving and changing with the times? Because I think they should be credited for going in early and getting that big treasure chest of money to go at, knowing that this was going to be an asset. But now with all of these, like Indiana and Vanderbilt, making like smart choices and finding guys in the transfer portal, it may not be about just how much money you throw at people. So how do you see them evolving?
Well, I think it's a slow evolution, Willie. I want it to be a little bit of a quicker evolution. And here's what I mean by that. Tennessee took great joy in telling everybody all year that, hey, we got the youngest roster in the SEC. Hey, look at the percentage of freshmen we're playing in the SEC. Well, how'd that work in the second half against Vanderbilt, right? How'd that work in the second half against Oklahoma? How'd that work the whole month of November? How'd that work against a much more veteran Illinois team in a bowl game? I mean, Tennessee's got a lot of young talent. I'll credit Josh Heupel for giving young guys opportunities and being, you know, someone who's big on high school recruiting and that being a lifeblood of the program. But how you're going to get relevant and stay good is you're going to get old and you're going to stay old. I think Vanderbilt's learned that by having the oldest team in the SEC by a mile. And they were physically dominant against certain opponents, even though they weren't as talented. You know, I don't know that Vandy's as talented as Tennessee, player for player. But by goodness, they were tougher. They were much tougher. And they were a smarter football team. They were more together. And I think you get that with age, even if you're bringing in a bunch of one-year players.
I think we've concluded, Chad, that in all sports, I see it in baseball too. It's not always the case, but it tends to be an advantage if you are older and more experienced. right? There is an advantage to having more 22, sometimes 23-year-olds out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talked about this, Willie. We've had many discussions about this in the NCAA tournament. Like, what are the teams to pick early in the NCAA tournament? Oh, it's this team, you know, it's a Bradley team that's got 5 fifth-year seniors that have played together the whole time, right? And they're going up against Coach Cal's team that are 18 years old. Oh, you better watch out for that group because they're connected. They've been together for a while. You know, they were over-recruited. They've been – now all the big programs can do the same thing, right? They can go and get 22-, 23-year-old guys who are mature, who have been through other systems, that can come in and get along with teammates, and they can do things the right way. So I think that's the lesson for Tennessee and everyone. Tennessee was too young this year. There's no value in today's college football. They played more freshmen – than anyone else in America. Now, that may be good if they've retained most of those guys they wanted, so that could help them, you know, next year or the year after. But this year it got them to 8-5, and that's just not good enough right now for Josh Heupel in Tennessee. Expectations are higher, so I think they need to get older. I think they did a good job of that defensively after bringing a lot of Penn State guys and what they did in the portal. But offensively, I just don't know, Willie, if trying to go with George McIntyre as a redshirt freshman and then a true freshman, if that's your chief competition for the starting quarterback spot, I don't know that that's the smart way to do it in today's college football.
Chad Withrow of Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Friday. Chad, great stuff as always. Stay safe, stay warm. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys, please, please survive the white death over the weekend so you can be back on Monday.
The ferns.
To entertain all of
you. Yes, we will survive fern as best we can. Thank you, Chad.
All right, thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. Let's get back into the Predators because I think some of you want to respond to how I feel about the local professional hockey team. So we'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.